Well, let's get started here. Welcome to Greek Club, the thousands and thousands of listeners who are joining us here online. That's thousands if you count each cell in their bodies as one listener. So, and we are continuing to work and walk through 2 Corinthians. And many thanks to Will Stelzer, who is a PhD student here. And I might also add the point guard on the basketball team. Who apparently has gotten us about as far as verse 8. Does that sound right? Harry suggested that maybe that was the case. So if anyone can sort of contravene that, speak now or forever hold your peace. So I'll tell you what, we'll get a running start on verse 7, and then we'll pick up with the paired participles. So verse 7, maybe I won't read it since it was read already. Paul says, by way of contrast, and notice that there's this glory language, wonderful, light, shining, etc., in the prior paragraph leading up to verse 6. But Paul doesn't want to fall into a theology of glory or something like that. So he goes on to say, in really some contrast, verse 7, but we have this treasure, the treasure being presumably the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ, from verse 6 at least. We have this treasure in ostrakinois skeuesen, earthen vessels is the way, ha aner autos, the man himself. Well, we got up to the participles, is that right? The strings of participles?
If I looked at it, I can tell you.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you a lot for leaving them to me. I really appreciate that.
They're all functioning the same, so explain it once and move on.
Good. See? It's that point guard. Drive to the bucket, see? And the image of clay vessels usually is taken to mean fractured, flawed, imperfect, weak, things like that. Which I think is right. And then the purpose, in order that the abundance, the hyperbole of the power might be from God and not from us. And then take a look at 8 and 9 and probably 10. The punctuation there, as you can see at the end of verse 10, puts a period finally. And what we have here is 1, 2, 3, 4 sets of paired participles. So we have in verse 8... maybe I'll just read the whole mess, read the inspired mess, and then work with it. So we'll go all the way to verse 10, okay? So, en panti thlebamenoi al ou stena karumenoi, aparumenoi al ouk ex aparumenoi, diakamenoi al ouk en kata lepamenoi, kata balamenoi al ouk apalumenoi. And now the pattern, in a sense, breaks, probably signaling the end of a fairly long sentence. Pantata tain nekrosin tu Jesu, ento somati peri ferantes, hina, kai heizoe tu Jesu, ento somati hemon phanerothe. Now here's the deal. In Greek, participles, it's barely possible for them to stand as finite verbs. There's some discussion, for instance, about context in which a participle can stand as an as an imperative. And you see this discussion, imperatival participles. My sense of this is a discussion which has become a little like cancer, in that when this notion was originally discussed by grammarians, it was a very specific contextual decision which then sort of grew so that in very reliable commentaries and places like this, you see people sort of quickly going to the suggestion that a participle can be functioning like an independent clause verb. This is extremely rare, and it ought to be the case of last resort. So if you can find a real verb, if I can insult the participle for a second, if you can find a real verb anywhere close on which the participle is dependent, that's the way you should go. And we have two real verbs in verse 7. We have ekumen, we have, and we also have the real verb in the henna clause, which, of course, is only one letter with a bunch of squiggles on it. That is the subjunctive of the linking verb, a, in order that the abundance of the power might be. I wonder if the best way would be to link these participles back to ekumen. We have this treasure. And then you might take, as Will suggested, you might actually take all these participles in the same way, that is, temporally, while. See, we have this treasure while in all things we are being thliboed. Pressed, thlibo means to press, and it can then mean oppress. And it's all the participles, as you saw, were have the same ending, the menoi ending, so we can take them as passive voice, could be middle in form, of course. While in everything we are being pressed, but we are not being stenokoreoed, constricted. Or in some sense, it has to mean worse than oppressed. So what, confined or completely, let's see, what would be another synonym here? So we're being pressed, but we're not locked up, maybe, or something like that. We are confused. While we are confused. So the referent of all these participles would be the we of ekumen, okay, because that would be the masculine plural nominative referent. We are being aporeoed, which is, aporeo means to be at a loss, which is why Daniel Wallace actually has a joke in his grammar when he has 900 uses of the genitive. He has actually the aporetic genitive, which is what you call it when you don't know what else to call it. See, to be at a loss, okay?
So. Can't call it, no one can.
Exactly, yeah. And if he can't think of a category, nobody can, yeah. I call that the genitive of ambiguity, by the way. So, being at a loss, but not ex aporeod. See, not completely at a loss. Again, each of these, when Paul is pairing these participles, he's acknowledging the difficulty of his apostolic life and ministry. Forgive the editorial comment. Oh, does Paul have a successful ministry? That depends on how you define success, right? Verse 7, being persecuted, dioko, as you know, means to pursue. It can be in a positive sense, but here in this context, while we are being persecuted, but not being forsaken. Enkatalepo. This is the same verb, as it turns out, in the cry of dereliction in Matthew and Mark. Being cast down, being kataballoed. Here's a happy verb where the prefixed preposition and the main verb actually adds up to the meaning, right? So kata plus the genitive means down, right? Being thrown down, but not being destroyed or perishing. So again, I think even though it seems awkward to us, it's easy enough, I think, to link all of these as circumstances that are connected to we have this treasure in earthen vessels. And then one could quibble, not quibble, but you could discuss, or is it temporal? Is it manner? Is it, you know, how precisely do we take all these participles? I think English translations typically just weasel them, right, and just kind of ing all the participles. And then finally, at the end, they have one more participle, periferontes. Periphero, not too surprisingly, means to carry around. And notice how Paul interrupts the word order pattern. So if you're hearing this, this may be a clue that we're coming to the end, you know, of a sequence. So verse 10, always, then reach down for the participle, always carrying, and what are we carrying around? Tain nekrosin, the death of Jesus in the body. presumably our body, Paul is saying. And the purpose is in order that also the life of Jesus might be manifested in your body. So again, this is it's familiar to us, especially perhaps as Lutherans, but to other Christians as well. This sort of model of apostolic ministry that is simply patterned after the cross itself. And so obviously we get the theology of the cross not only from St. Paul, but perhaps most articulately from him. So it's all one sentence. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines, a fairly long sentence. So questions about any of that, the grammar, why didn't Paul take a break, why are participles so evil, anything coming to mind? Josh?
Could we say that amon, because amon occurs after posthumon, the second time it occurs, could we say that the amon would govern the first occurrence as well? Because when you translate it, you said in the body, but then you assume that it's our body. Is that why we would assume that?
That's a good question. So the first entosomati in verse 10, right? I don't know if it normally when you have a pronoun like that that's going to govern two elements, they might be more closely linked. Yeah. So it's a little bit of a different grammar, but I think the context would lead in the same direction. Again, I mean, we just heard in church, was it last Sunday or the Sunday before, we've been hearing from 2 Timothy, right? I have fought the fight. I have run the race. Right, I have kept the faith. See, and this isn't at a celebratory potluck. You know, he's from it's from prison. Yeah, it's cold in here. Bring my cloak. You know. Oh, and the parchments too. Right. Notice that Paul does not say bring the iPad. See, nor would he ever. He understands that books are God's intended means of learning. And that the fifth evangelist is not Bach, but Johann Gutenberg. So it's really a different way of thinking. And again, every culture is trying to lure us, in some sense, away from the ways of Christ. And our culture, Corinth was the same way. That's why Paul talks this way. Corinth was very similar in some ways. You know, physical prowess, athleticism, money, status, beauty. See, these are core values, I use that phrase, in first century Corinth. They are, you know. Anthony Thistleton's commentary does a nice job of describing a lot of things. It's about 1,300 pages, but it has a very nice job of laying this out. And so the message of 1 and 2 Corinthians is, in that sense, very contemporary also for us in many ways as Americans. So... good. Other questions on 7, 8, 9, and 10? One sentence. Okay? All right. Verse 11. Aegar hemes hoi zontes eis thanaton para didamatha dia Iesun. Hina kai he zoe tu Iesu phanerothe ente thnete sarki hemon. For always, Paul simply now is explaining more what he just said about carrying the death of Jesus around in his body. For always, we who are living are being handed over into death on account of Jesus, because of Jesus. Yeah, let me get the hint of clause, Josh. In order that also the life of Jesus might be manifested in our mortal flesh. Kind of basic translation. Yeah, Josh, go ahead.
When he does talk about us carrying the his death and also manifesting his life, mm-hmm. Couldn't this be related to baptismal speech, since he kind of has the same kind of wording with Romans 6?
Mm-hmm. Right, death and resurrection, yeah. For those who may be listening online, the question is, could this be some sort of reference, at least to sort of baptismal talk, because you've got death and life? I would say probably indirectly, and St. Paul would link a lot of things back to that formative event when, you know, we become joined together to the likeness of Christ's death in the hope that we will be joined together to the likeness of his resurrection. Here, of course, it's talking a little bit more directly about simply persecution and difficulty, right? Yeah. So, but it's a good comment, and I think that theologically it does relate back to dying with Christ and rising with him. So we've got the, just to do a little grammar in verse 11, we've got hoidzontes, that's the subject, the living guys, we, the living guys, right, from Zao, are being handed over, delivered, just a present indicative passive. And again, hina, as it very often does, is expressing purpose. Notice that Paul calls flesh here is not theological flesh, if I can say it that way. He's talking about bodies, right? Mortal flesh is not, again, flesh in the sense of sinful nature, as the NIV will often translate. He's just talking about the fact that his body is decaying, right? It's an imperfect body. It's getting beat up. And as Paul actually says in Galatians, there's this great sort of John Wayne tough guy comment at the end of Galatians where he says, don't give me any more strife. He says, I bear the marks of Jesus on my body. And he's probably talking about scars, right? And, yeah, whenever I read that, I feel like a wimp. And I am. But that's the way it goes. Questions about verse 11? Yeah, Tim.
The first word, I.
Yes?
What is that?
It's an adverb.
It means
always.
And if we took the variant, how would that change?
Well, heck fire, I didn't even look at the variant. Well, it's the conditional A, right? For if we who are living are being more than, let's see. I don't think it would make any sense. So, would you like to read it that way?
I didn't know if hina.
Oh, good question. I don't think so, not that I know of. Yeah. Although it could very well be a two-page report if this were a real class. So, yeah, I don't think hina can be then in a in an apodosis. So, yep. Good. Other questions about verse 11? No, it's just a little word. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Greek doesn't need consonants, right? There's a town in Missouri called Aola. Anybody know it? It's spelled A-I-E-O-L-A. It's on the way up to Hannibal or up in that neck of the woods. And their motto is, the only thing missing is you. Because they actually have A-E-I-O. They have four of the five vowels in English in their name. So, anyway. Don't ask me. I thought of that because, as my grown children say, I'm a dork. Okay, what do you think? Verse 12, are we ready? All right, hosta, at the beginning of a sentence, not result, although sort of logically it's closely akin, but inferential, therefore. Say, hosta, hathanatos en hemin en ergetai, heda zoe, en humin. Therefore, death is being worked. Let's see. Is that? I forgot to look it up. Is that en ergo? That's not deponent, is it? Not that I can think of. Death is being worked in us, in connection with us. But life, then repeat the verb, is being worked in connection with you. And that's just the way it is, Paul says. That's the apostolic calling. Yeah, we talk about things as if these things as if they were easy. I can't imagine that they are, which is why you don't volunteer for a particular kind of duty, right? You're called to it. So if anyone would like to be an apostle, I don't know, Dan, would you straighten them out? If they, yeah, okay, right. That's easy enough, right? Two short clauses, and we can. go a little further at least. Yes, we'll get 13 and 14 together. Ekantasta ta auta pneuma tes pistaos katata gegra menon epistusa dia elalisa kai hemes pistuamen dia kai lalumen edatas hate ha egeras tan kyrian jesun kai hemas sun jesu egere kai parastase sun humin. A participle here, the main verb is pistuamen, we believe, at the end of the second line. The participle probably, I think it's normally taken as causally. The we in the main verb is the unexpressed referent, right? Because we have the same spirit of faith, believing spirit, maybe, the spirit of faith, according to the thing which has been written. And now Paul cites the Psalter, as you can see from the side reference. I believed, therefore I spoke. Also, emphatic pronoun, we believe, therefore also we speak. And why do we do that? Eidates, from oida. This is a perfect participle in form, but oida, as you probably recall, has a present indicative meaning. Because we know, and what is it that we know? Hatiklas, that, reporting indirect discourse, or object of what we know, the one who raised the Lord Jesus, also us with Jesus, will raise, egere. You can see the shift in the stem from egero with a diphthong in the middle of the stem to just the epsilon, and then also the circumflex, a lot of liquid stem, second principal part verbs function like epsilon contract verbs. That explains the circumflex. See, why in the world do I know that? The answer is because I teach elementary Greek. That's why I know that. So it's not because I have the Holy Spirit or anything like that. Also, will raise with us with Jesus and parastase from paristemi, will present, supply us, sun humin, with you. Again, note the eschatological perspective. This is the hope. This is the goal. This is what helps keep Paul going. Maybe we'll try to do some damage on verse 15 very quickly and stop. We'll have to clean up some of it. It's a little awkward. Oh, well, I actually shouldn't say that. Questions on 13 or 14. We can always come back to verse 15. Yes?
You translated it same.
I did.
How is that? I thought it's a pronoun.
It is a pronoun. It is the third person personal pronoun, which can function as an adjective. And when it is in attributive position, it means same. See? You didn't notice, perhaps, but when I saw Brother Stelzer, I said, ha aner autos. When the third person personal pronoun is in predicate position, it intensifies. So if somebody translates, ha aner autos means the man himself. If I had said ha autos aner, it would mean the same man. So you, when you see Dr. Veltz, there's not been many Veltz sightings on campus because he's on sabbatical. But when you see him, you say to him, ha aner autos, and he will be happy, at least temporarily. And he is a happy person and quite confident as well, and it's because he's smart. So, yeah, no, the pronoun is actually acting like an adjective. Right. Yep. Very good. So, okay. We'll do verse 15 next week. And so we'll stop there at verse 14. Thank you very much.